640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. United Auto Workers President John Fain is confident about the tentative deal reached with the last of the big three.
We are bringing this tentative agreement to you because we wholeheartedly believe that our strike squeezed every last dime out of General Motors.
CBS's Chris Van Cleve says the union...
They got probably about as much as they could have reasonably hoped to get out of the automakers. You know, they had been asking for a four-day work week and a return of pensions, some things that they just were not going to happen. But they managed a 25% pay raise over the course of 4 years, which is a fairly significant hike, as well as improvements to retirement and a return of cost of living protections as well.
Halloween weekend shootings across the U.S. leave at least 11 dead and more than 70 injured. A 22-year-old man is charged with second-degree murder in a Tampa shooting in which two people died. Many unanswered questions about red flags regarding the mass shooter in Maine who killed 18 people and whether enough was done to prevent the tragedy. The local sheriff's office says he was on their radar. CBS's Matt Piper.
As recently as September 17th, the county sheriff's office says a deputy spoke to the shooter's brother who said he would work to secure firearms the killer had access to. A File 6 alert had been issued a day prior, which is when police are trying to locate someone. The alert urged that officers use extreme caution, saying the man was armed and dangerous. The alert was canceled on October 18th, 1 week before the shooting rampage.
Loved ones of an Israeli soldier captured on October 7th are thrilled Hamas has released her. Israel says some 230 Israelis are still being held hostage in Gaza. The White House says it's confident when it comes to the increasing number of aid trucks getting into Gaza. But as for the pause in fighting, National Security spokesman John Kirby says...
We do not believe that a ceasefire is the right answer right now. We believe that a ceasefire right now benefits Hamas.
A judge orders federal border authorities to stop cutting the razor wire installed along the Rio Grande by the state of Texas. Reporter Chris Fox in Austin with more.
Federal Judge Alia Moses ordered the border agents to stop cutting the razor wire pending the outcome of a November 7th hearing. Last week, Texas sued the Biden administration to stop the practice. The coiled wires rolled out in May are part of Governor Greg Abbott's multi-billion dollar border security effort.
And behind it, you'll have National Guard soldiers as well as DPS officers. Together, those two strategies have directly stopped people from entering Texas illegally.
The Department of Homeland Security claims it's responsible for protecting migrants from being injured, regardless of their legal status. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Evers says he isn't sold on a Republican-led bill to address PFAS in Wisconsin. The bill would create a grant program to help communities affected by PFAS chemicals and provide aid, but it would also limit the state's Department of Natural Resources' ability to hold those polluters accountable. Evers didn't commit to either sign or veto the bill in an interview with Wisconsin Eye on Monday. Governor Evers and Republicans who control the state legislature remain far apart on boosting Wisconsin's economy and dealing with the state's child care crisis. Republicans are proposing wide-ranging tax cuts and child care deregulation. The Democratic governor says he'd veto those bills.
That is not going to impact inflation. If we're worried about inflation, let's do a middle-class tax cut, and that's it.
Evers appeared on the Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks face the Heat. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Bucks and the Miami Heat tonight at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. The Bucks losing last night to the Atlanta Hawks, 127-110. Bucks newcomer Damian Lillard just with 6 points. NFL Monday Night Football. The Detroit Lions with a rare primetime game at home at Ford Field against the Las Vegas Raiders. The Green Bay Packers have made their pass rusher, Rashawn Gary, one of the highest paid linebackers, a 4-year deal worth $96 million, Gary on achieving his goal.
It's not hard, man, when you come in an organization like this, and you have guys that's going to work Monday to Sunday and want the same outcome. So it's not like everybody's down, moving around, we're hungry. And like I said, we're excited for the next opportunity. So as long as we have that energy, as long as everybody's pushing to be better and get better and hold ourselves to that standard, look each other in the mirror, understand what we need to do right and what we need to fix that was wrong, we'd be fine.
Linebacker Rashawn Gary. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. 24 tonight, under cloudy skies, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Snow showers likely tomorrow, 35. 20 tomorrow night, chance for snow showers. About an inch of snow tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 27 degrees.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
The IEA projects that solar energy will be the dominant source of electricity by 2030 with existing government policies. However, the report warns that current policies won't be fast enough to avoid accelerating climate impacts. So the IEA calls for a tripling of renewable energy and a doubling of energy efficiency efforts by 2030.
Keep calling for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, we've been seeing a lot of interesting messaging coming out around Social Security. And you know, I was just reading through this article. One of these opinion pieces that gets picked up. And I forget it. Washington Post, New York Times, it was one of them. And it grabbed my attention in that the headline was, you know, for the good of the country, you know, older Americans should work more and take less. This was the argument that they were making, you know, saying, look, you know, in the old days, you know, people didn't live that long. You know, now people are living, you know, into their 80s and 90s and retiring as early as 62. And they went through this whole very well thought out, very well constructed argument. And look, you know, our Social Security and Medicare systems do need to be updated in a way that makes them solvent. And I've had people say, see, this is why we need to do what the Republicans want to do. And that's cut. You know, raise the retirement age to 70 or 75, or, you know, as one congressman said, you know, people want to work well past 75. And maybe there are a handful of people that want to do that. Maybe there are. But the majority of working people who take a shower at the end of the day, people whose hands are like mine, calloused and dirty most of the time, they're looking towards that 62, 65, 67 as, can I get there? Will my body hold out long enough? Will my knees and my back, will I be able to keep up? And employers don't want older workers, you know, doing those jobs either, because they're not as productive as younger people. Look, older workers are going to be smarter, more efficient. They're going to figure out, but that only goes so far, especially when you're talking about a 70-year-old guy, you know, laying brick. There may be a couple out there, but for the mass of people, move them into retirement age. Well, they're making this argument, and throughout the whole article, you know, they're making good points. Look, you know, people are living longer. They're getting more out than they paid in, and you know, we need to figure this out. And you know, they even on one line even brought up the the idea of, you know, maybe we, you know, have to talk about raising taxes on rich people. It was very, it was a quick line, and they quickly, you know, brushed right past it. But then they get to the end, and this is the part that again, you know, it's interesting to me how these things always seem to pit people against each other. It's never about, hey, how for the good of, because they're calling to older Americans for the good of the country. Sacrifice, tighten the belt. The final line of this article, and if you want to take a look at it, it's titled, "For the Good of the Country, Older Americans Should Work More and Take Less." The final little paragraph reads, and I quote, "Younger Americans must help lead this transformation. Because every year reform is delayed, they and future generations will receive less support during their working and child-raising years, just as their parents and grandparents did on important issues. It's time for them to speak out and step up." And you go, this is divide and conquer. This is pitting young people against old people. This is what got us into this mess. The wealthy, they're not really talked about. Out of a, you know, 800-word article, tax the wealthy was tax the wealthy. Three words. The rest was, how can working people struggle more? How can working people sacrifice? How could the good of the country should you take less? And I'm going, I'm sorry. I'm not going to put granny back on cat food. I don't want granny having to divide up her medications and only take half a pill today to make it last a little longer. That's not in the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest moment. Sorry, not happening. But this divide and conquer, this is kind of the amazing thing that they get away with all the time, because they want you to focus on, here's the argument, this is it, binary choice. We do nothing and it implodes and everyone dies, or you working people sacrifice. There's nothing in the middle that we can talk about. And look, there's plenty of things that we can and should be doing. First of them being scrap the cap. Sorry, and it should not just be earned income. We should be passive in portfolio income. It should be every bit of income that rich people get that it's taxed on, just like working people. 100% of it. But that's not fair. Yes, it is. Because understand what Social Security is. It's not a retirement program. It was never meant that. It's an anti-poverty insurance program. Sometimes you pay into insurance and you don't get your money out. It's for the betterment of society. And sometimes you pay into insurance and you get more out. That's the nature of the game. But this is one of those moments where corporate America is making out wildly. And understand, what's happening to Social Security was not even mentioned in this. That now you've got over 40% of the working people in this country who aren't paying in because they're gig workers. I know, they're self-employed. No, they're gig workers. They're working for a corporation who 20 years ago would have been their employee. But now, because they've figured out how to game the system, now no one's paying into this stuff. And it is struggling. And there are problems. But killing it does not save it. And I love the argument, we know we got to kill it to save it. No, if you kill it, you've killed it. It's dead. It doesn't help anyone. You can't save something dead. And I've been seeing a lot of this talk. There's been a lot of it. In fact, you know, I was on social media, and this is the weirdest thing. I don't know the algorithm, because I get some, I look at motorcycle videos. My son and I, you know, I'm looking for Tale of the Dragon videos where I can go and, you know, me and the boy can ride next year. And I'm seeing Social Security stuff. And there's a guy, and I don't know his name, but he works for, the Dave Ramsey. And he's talking about how your union workers, you know, they demand things, and union workers, you know, who do they think they are? You know, all this kind of insanity. And you go, maybe you've never heard of unions. Maybe you've never heard of negotiations. The thing that they didn't mention in this argument is the thing that, you know, Ramsey's, you know, guy doesn't seem to get. You know how we save Social Security? Get people with higher wages. People with higher wages pay higher, yes, higher Social Security tax. It's one of those things that I keep coming back to. They always ask us, take a little more, take one for the team, sacrifice a little more. And yet, it never filters up. You know what does trickle down? Pain and suffering and sacrifice. You never see the people at the top going, yep, I'm going to take one for the team. At least I haven't. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. So I too have noticed this, and I thought to myself, oh, gee, this is the Republicans' new way of trying to get rid of Social Security. But the thing that I really was also thinking was, you know, for a party that's supposed to be pro-life, like they, you know, just scream it at us all the time, we're all for guns and babies and Jesus, and, you know, we're pro-life, and everybody else is demon spawn. They sure want to sacrifice the older people. I mean, if you recall, yeah, Greg Abbott, during COVID, was, yeah, already, you know, hey, Grandpap and Grandma should just die to, you know, keep the economy open. And it's just amazing to me that their base, well, even though a lot of them are uneducated and unable to have critical thinking skills and reasoning, you would think that it would at least be a wake-up call to go, wait a minute, you want to get rid of Grandpap and Grandma and my Social Security? It's just amazing.
Yeah. No, no, I'm with you. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And look, you know, as I've said a million times, this is not new. You want to make lives better? Really, you want to make lives better? Higher wages. That's how we do it. Better wages, hours, conditions. That's simple. Share the wealth. Simple. Perfect example. You know, the economy is doing much better. Unemployment rates at historic lows. We're seeing, you know, wages going up. And, you know, as Tim Ryan said a bit ago, you know, people aren't really internalizing it. And I think a lot of that has to do with the media that we're consuming. I think they're being told for some, you know, life's hard for everybody. You know, inflation's killing us. And yet somehow, you know, most people that I know, they're doing okay. They're griping about the prices they're paying, but the wages are starting to pick up. So life is getting better. Now, I found it interesting. The LA Times ran a story talking about the murder rate in this country. Evidently, and again, wouldn't know this watching Fox News, wouldn't know this, you know, watching any of our news coverage. But according to the LA Times, the homicide rate in this country in 2022 dropped significantly and has plummeted faster this year than any time on record, putting the country on track for one of the biggest declines in killing ever recorded. We're down here. Crime statistics have shown the murder rate is way down. Yet public perception, you talk to a conservative, you talk to a red hat, there's murder on every corner. MS-13's coming for everyone. And I look at this and we're in this place where, you know, we've got a media structure that's so hell-bent on keeping eyeballs glued or ears glued to whatever medium that they're just out and out lying most of the time. They're making stuff up. Now, of course, you know, Fox News isn't really news. It's entertainment. Tucker Carlson, you know, very clear about that. But at what point do we go, this is harmful for the country? This kind of lying and this kind of insanity. Because remember, they told us recession's coming. Every day they've been telling us, recession's coming, recession any day now. The economy is in the toilets. Recession is coming. And yet the economy is doing fairly well. And I know Joe Biden broke another promise by not having a recession or some nonsense. But the reality is things are moving in the right direction. We're reshoring manufacturing. We're investing in infrastructure. We're doing solid, positive, good things. But wouldn't know it, would not know it, listening to the corporate-controlled mainstream media. Because it's not in their interest. It's not in their interest to say Biden's doing a good job. It's not in their interest to, you know, the story like I talked about a minute ago. For an older guy, you know, he Joe Biden is, you know, really forward thinking. And you go, yeah, that's what I want. I want somebody who's going to go, hey, I have a vision for the future. I have a path to make lives better. And he wants his legacy to be that of someone who made lives better. So it's going to be interesting to see where we go. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So according to Goldman Sachs, the rich people, Goldman Sachs evidently, they have removed their forecast for a government shutdown. And look, you know, maybe this is a good thing. But they said, you know, given this new geopolitical risks and the election of the Speaker of the House, they have removed it for the short term. Now, 2024, whole different story. Whole different story that, understand, the good Christian Mike Johnson doesn't want to screw up Christmas, you know, doesn't want, to go against feeding the hungry and kicking people out of their homes at Christmas time when they're celebrating the birth of Jesus. Can't have that. But, you know, the day after Christmas, which is like a pink slip, you know, time of the year, he's all in favor of that, I would assume. Now, I do find it interesting that they have thrown what was a little fish into a giant pond. And the media folk are on a feeding frenzy. They are going full tilt boogie after this guy who, you know, evidently no one decided to do the Oppo research on his background. I know you run for Congress, you know, someone's supposed to do that. But in a district like his, where his opponent had no resources to actually, you know, do any of this research, you kind of get away with it. When you step into the national stage, when you are two heartbeats away from being president, that brings a whole nother level of scrutiny. And now we're finding out all of the crazy, all of the insane, all of the things that that Mike Johnson has said and done. And, you know, at 25, he evidently adopted a black child, a 14-year-old, which some people are saying a little creepy. I don't know. I'm not making any judgments because I don't know the facts. But it is interesting. The fact that he took down his website. Scrubbed his website, basically scrubbed his online presence. You know, him and his wife evidently did 69 podcasts. Evidently did the 69 podcasts. and took those down. But, you know, again, on the internet, never goes away. Someone did archive them. They are available for download. So you can hear all of the insanity that the couple, you know, decided to spew. And his wife, you know, basically took her website down for her Onward Christian Counseling Services business the day after HuffPost, you know, pointed out that there were, you know, things on the site that compared homosexuality to bestiality and incest. Probably not the best thing for the speaker to have, you know, I don't know, his wife running around saying. And then there's the video, you know, from 2017 of him basically saying that mass shootings are not because of guns. No. It's because of feminism. It's because of no-fault divorce, legalized abortion. That's what it's really about. Yeah. And look, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Now, here's the thing. This is where my mind goes. Because, again, I don't like being shoveled this kind of, he's the Antichrist or he's the hero. I'm sure he's bad. And I'm sure, you know, some people see him as good. I see him being thrown out and sacrificed as a diversion. And you go, what do you mean, Rick? How could that possibly be? Nothing's getting done. There's going to be nothing that passes out of the House that's going to make it through the Senate. There's going to be no legislative action coming out of this House of Representatives. It's all going to be message, virtual signaling. It's all going to be that kind of, hey, vote for us in 24 because we got bad ideas. And our bad ideas are going to be, how can we punish the others? That's all we're getting. But I think Republicans may have, and maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but here's a guy who's toxic. His positions are out of the mainstream of this country. You know, the country is not far right or far left. I argue for the most part, when you talk to people, we are center left. People believe in social programs. People believe in helping the poor. People believe in welfare and the right to choose and public education and all of the things that the right is totally against, the country's on board with. They're on board with a functional government that solves problems. And yet you've got a Republican Party who, one, hates working people, and two, wants to destroy our government. Why? So the wealthy can get wealthier. And they are wildly wealthier. But I think they threw this guy out there knowing that corporate America was going to do what corporate America does. The mainstream corporate-controlled media, all of the bottom feeder media, you know, presence, they're all going to look for the most you know, divisive, horrible stuff. Clicks and views. All of the you know, bunch of clickbaiters out there. And this guy gives everyone the red meat. So if you're on the right, he's a hero. He's fighting for family values, and he's fighting for all of this, all of their, you know, again, this stuff that they don't really believe in. But it makes for good messaging. Or they don't believe it for themselves. They want to impose it on everyone else. And they know that the left is going to go, you know, chumming after all of the divisive stuff. And we're going to end up just fighting each other and bickering and eating each other while not noticing that we still have hungry children. In fact, child hunger doubled thanks to Republican policies. Thank you. And Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. We still have homeless veterans. We still have major problems in this country. People who don't have health care. People who don't have access to nutritional food. People who don't have the ability to retire, even though they want to destroy Social Security. There are real problems. And real big ones that take real statesmen and women to come and decide on. We don't have that. So what we need bread and circus. We need entertainment. We need diversion. And that's what I think Mike Johnson brings us. He's the chew toy for the ideologues. He's the guy who, we're going to find out some really horrible stuff. Although, trust me, if there's something in that closet, it will be found. When you step that close to the kind of power that he is now close to, they will find it. You can't bury anything deep enough. Ask Denny Hastert. He tried. And I had someone tell me today, he's going to be the next Denny Hastert. You wait. I'm going, I don't know. I hope, for whoever the victim would have been. That's not accurate. But who knows? My problem still is, how do we get things done? How do we solve the problems that are very real?
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Auto workers head back to work. UAW President Sean Fain.
Now that we have a groundbreaking tentative agreement at GM, we're officially suspending our stand-up strike against each of the big three.
3 months before last week's deadly shooting rampage in Maine, the Army says leaders of the gunman's Army Reserve Unit said he was behaving erratically. CBS's Matt Piper.
The county sheriff's office says the killer's family reached out in May concerned for his well-being. Police eventually issued an alert trying to locate him with a warning that he was armed and dangerous. After a month, the alert was canceled. That was 1 week before the shootings.
A National Institutes of Health back study finds cardiovascular deaths due to extreme heat are projected to increase between 2036 and 2065. Dr. Sameed Katana with the University of Pennsylvania.
That increase is expected to be greater amongst older adults compared to younger adults, and greater amongst non-Hispanic Black adults compared to non-Hispanic white adults in the United States.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers called on the state Supreme Court to throw out Wisconsin's current legislative maps in a legal brief filed Monday. The state Supreme Court announced Friday that it would take up the case challenging Wisconsin's maps. Evers joined State Attorney General Josh Call in writing a brief supporting redrawing the maps. Evers added he wants the case to move swiftly and that not one election should take place under the current gerrymandered maps. The Supreme Court will hear oral argument on the case next month. Four different hunting seasons in Wisconsin start next month. Gun deer season is the busiest. It starts November 18th. There are also hunting seasons for beaver, mink, muskrat, and otters. The Department of Natural Resources is reminding hunters about safety and to make sure they have the proper permits. The DNR is telling non-hunters to be aware that a lot of people will be in and out of the woods in the coming weeks. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. 24 tonight, under cloudy skies, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Snow showers likely tomorrow, 35. 20 tomorrow night, chance for snow showers. About an inch of snow tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 27 degrees.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Standards of ethical conduct. Seriously? Including the notorious money sleaze Clarence Thomas? But wait, even a progressive justice, Elena Kagan, joins in the charade that an ethical code might produce, well, ethics, or at least political cover for the lack thereof. A code, she surmises, would, quote, go far in persuading other people that we are adhering to the highest standards of conduct. Hello, would you be persuaded? Yet, these Supremes won't even take this minimal step of adopting a simple code to measure basic integrity. It would be a good idea for us to do it, Barrett Meekly says. It would be a good thing for the court to do that, Kagan echoes. This is Jim Hightower saying, stop it. Stop the pitiful posturing. There's only 9 of you. You're in charge. Convene a happy hour, confront reality, and do the right thing. Just do it. I'll buy the beer.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting story. Evidently, X, formerly known as Twitter, when Elon Musk bought Twitter, it was worth $44 billion. That's what he paid for it. And some argued it was worth probably even a little more than that. But according to an internal memo, they're arguing it's now worth just about $19 billion. So he lost more than half of the money he put on Twitter. Now, again, I argue wasn't his money. Got it from other people so that he could destroy Twitter. And he has done a fabulous job of destroying what Twitter was. But, yeah, it shows rich people don't. It's not about money, about control and power. Because some of the things that he's been doing, questionable at best. Free speech, not so much. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Big trial going on, you might have noticed, all going on. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So, the big trial, evidently Ivanka Trump is now, she's going to testify. Originally tried to get out of it, probably not going to happen.
Right. In fact, I thought originally that, she would be out of it because there were some news stories, you know, that she may possibly not be brought in. But now it's been delayed in the civil fraud trial. So I think, it will be delayed until, till Monday. Wait a minute. She was supposed to take the stand, Friday?
Right. And but now Dumb Jr. And Eric are going to do that on Friday.
Right. She's going to appear November the 8th.
Right.
Which will be the around the election. Right. Yeah, she'll appear then. So it'll be interesting to see, what happens with her during that. But originally, I thought she would be actually exempt from that.
Yeah, well, but, here's the thing. She was part of the business. So anyone having to do anything with the business, they're gonna call to the stand.
Right. There was the decision originally. She was dismissed in June from the lawsuit, and then there was New York Appeals Court that said some of the claims regarding her were outdated, but the judge still thought that she had some knowledge. Of course, even if some of the claims were outdated, she had personal knowledge of the individual, which would be Trump, and the defendants.
So we'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Right.
Also, going to get your thoughts on Mike Pence. Evidently, Pence aborted his campaign. One of the funniest things on Twitter said Pence can't abort the campaign until it's life-threatening. And it's not life-threatening yet.
I think Pence stopped the campaign before the first debate. There was no way that Pence, under any fashion or form, could have continued in a Republican primary because of the things that Trump obviously said about him.
Yep.
And the fact that he was the one that could have changed the election for the world, according to Trump and his people. So I never thought that he would continue on. Now, I think the next person eventually that there's a couple other ones that will drop out, but I just don't see where DeSantis remains. Nikki Haley, he went down 2 points and she went up from 6 to 16. So they're both at 16%. But the fact that she went up and he went down, I do compare DeSantis, though, to Jeb Bush. During the election, I used to tell this when I do all my radio calls, I would say, turn down the volume and watch Jeb Bush. He looks like he's in agony or, you know, Carl made him, you know, get out there.
Yeah.
Carl Rove, get out there, Jeb. Get on that stage right now. And if you look at it, he just didn't want to be there. And DeSantis has the same thing. One of them, you've seen the fake smile video where he, you know, he smiles and then he goes back to a frown. And he just doesn't look like he, you know, is comfortable up there, or I think he wants to be there. I just don't think he looks comfortable.
But I also just think that's his demeanor. I don't know the man, but I gotta, every time I see him, that's what he looks like. So I just assume that's his demeanor, you know, when he's happy. You know, he's grimacing even when he's smiling.
Because Vivek Ramaswamy, yeah, I know he's on, you know, political steroids, super hyped, et cetera. but he is a guy that looks like, you know, he really, really does want to be there. He wants to be. But not DeSantis. He just
yeah. So who does Pence now throw his massive support behind? I doubt it's going to be Trump.
Well, whoever, I would say, since it's Republican primary, whoever he hates, you know, he needs to endorse who he hates.
Yeah, I'll get you back.
Yeah, I'm supporting. You know, I'm endorsing Chris Christie. Yeah, he needs to support who he can't stand.
There you go.
Pence was nowhere.
Now, evidently, you know, you've got these disqualification clause hearings that are beginning in Colorado and Minnesota. Are you on board with the idea of using the courts to disqualify him? I'm really not comfortable with it.
Because
I still think for the good of the country, he has to be defeated soundly at the polls, even if that means the risk that, you know, he could be president again. But I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I don't like the process at all, because the process of insurrection, whether you can be a candidate due to, you know, going against the United States, you know, or whatever, especially in this case with it being Donald Trump. And I understand that there's been, you know, dozens of cases, you know, citing the 14th Amendment, and, you know, they've been filed. But I think that final decision is a decision of Smith and, you know, and the courts as to what happened. You know, there's a court case on it.
Right.
And so I think they won't win with these. And so, frankly, it gives Trump a lot of publicity that, you know, he beat the issue. This type of issue rising to this level is not going to be decided by, you know, this system. It's
right.
Just not. They're trying to bar him under the presidential ballot, and it's just not going to be decided that way. I don't think it's a good idea. I think whoever thought it up politically, forget substance-wise, I think politically they didn't think it through.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people doing things politically that they didn't really think through.
No, they didn't on this one.
But we'll see. Now, interestingly enough, the Justice Department is looking for a 10-year federal prison sentence for one of Trump's appointees who assaulted a police officer on January 6th. Again, I don't know, 10 years doesn't seem like a lot.
Well, in the beginning of this, you and I talked about it, when the first cases were coming down, the court was going light. And at that time, there were hundreds of people. And if the court would not go light, if the system, you know, if the prosecutors were asking the full ride and then the court was going way below that, it sends a message down the system to all those other people. If they were more stern in the ruling from the bench, then there would have been a lot of people that would have made some plea deals. They really would have done that. And especially for some of the things that they did, not just the insurrection part of it, but the fact that, you know, the assault in itself, you know, the assaults were horrific.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could get an assault charge on something else, not trying to break into the Capitol, for, frankly, I think a longer time.
But again, we'll see. Now, you know, I keep coming back to, you know, Trump and the trials and all this. And look, we keep giving him so much attention. I mean, it's you know, and in fact, you know, now you've got this guy who's now Speaker of the House. Trump gives him the nickname MAGA Mike. Now, everywhere you see, you know, the Democrats are going after MAGA Mike. Any thoughts on the new Speaker, Mike Johnson?
Well, he is, you know, certainly somebody that's an enigma in the sense that if you look back on this, people were saying, you know, Jim Jordan's too extreme. And this says a lot about Jim Jordan. He's too extreme. We can't have him, some of the Republicans said. But then they could have Johnson, who's extreme. But they couldn't have Jordan. It just shows you the internal hypocrisy of the whole situation. I do recognize, though, that Johnson has this style to him. And I read a couple articles. One was on a story where a reporter that had known him in Louisiana, you know, and said he's, you know, right wing, right of the right, but his style is not a, you know, aggressive looking style like Jim Jordan, for example, or another member. So as a result, it cuts him a little bit of a break that, you know, he is actually somebody that can say hello to you or, you know, communicate to you. But I kind of, you know, I saw the prayer thing is a big deal where everybody knelt in prayer in the well of the house, you know. And I was thinking just the other day, if you kneel in prayer in the well of the house, I wonder if somebody had taken prayer rugs and done that.
Yeah.
You think that religious freedom would have rang forth?
No, that's, you know? That's an excellent point. And and again, it's, you know, I'm not against people praying. Mm-hmm. Just do it the way, you know, for, you know, generations we did. Go home, kneel down in your bed and say whatever you need to say.
But here's the thing about Johnson that is the most telling of anything that has happened so far. Not just looking at his personal record or something, or his style that allows him to, you know, soften the Jim Jordan, you know, approach, but the fact of how he answered on national TV when asked about how he was going to conduct business. And his answer was, you know, the Bible. I'm going to make an argument on that for a second, okay, if I'm the reporter. I don't know why the reporter didn't. If he says, this is how I operate, and he points, you know, to the Bible, as a reporter, I'm going to say this. Let me ask you this question. Would you think that the good Lord would rather the 1% pay 5% more in taxes so that the hungry and homeless and downtrodden could have some financial support? I'd ask that question if he's going to answer the Bible is how he will conduct himself. This isn't a matter of saying the Bible is my faith to say what type of person he is. He answered that the Bible, you know, is his answer to the substance of the government problems. I think that in itself was shocking.
No, it's frightening. Where we've gone, because you know Jim Jordan, like you pointed out, is someone you just look at and you go, danger. That guy's crazy. Yeah. You know, he's extreme. He's got that kind of demeanor. This guy normalizes crazy. And I said the day of his vote, I said, this guy is going to bring a Christian version of Sharia law to this country that, you know, is frightening. And I believe that. I believe that's where these people want to take us, to where it's not just, you know, fascism of, you know, corporations and government ruling. It's a theocracy. It's a theocratic fascist state that is, you know, I can see, you know, Christian stonings and all of that. And I know that sounds extreme. I know, Rick, you're going too far. But I got to tell you, I know some of these people, and this is where their minds go.
Well, again, it's one thing if when asked the question about how are you going to operate, if you kind of brought it in this way and said, well, by the way, I'm a Christian, so I'm going to attempt to follow that, you know, philosophy. But when it comes to the public policy of the government, I'm going to be this way on balancing the budget or whatever. He answered, there's my guide. And like I said, I'd like to have been the reporter that would say, don't you think Jesus would want the 1% to pay 3% more for the homeless?
Yeah.
I mean, I would have asked him that question. I would like to see. Now, maybe he would have said, well, I'm an Old Testament guy. I don't know. You know,
okay, so Testament. Then, you know, when do I kill you for wearing that suit made of two different fabrics?
Right, with a button on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, his answer was, to me, that's the most shocking thing so far to me.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, I said this earlier, and I don't, maybe you'll disagree with me, but it feels to me like they put him out there because he could get the votes, knowing that he was going to take all the slings and arrows. Someone had to do Oppo research on him to know just, you know, what's in the closet and how extreme he is from mainstream thought. And there's part of me that goes, they threw him out into the, you know, this small fish into the big pond simply to get eaten. Because look, he's two heartbeats from the presidency. Of course he's in a different league than running an election against somebody with no resources. And they're going to dig up all of the craziness. And my argument is, and maybe this is where you'll agree or disagree, that that's the point. By our media, you know, all in on clickbaiting this guy, we're not paying attention to the failures of the Republican Party, the lead in the House. We're not paying attention to the fact that, you know, things aren't getting better for working people because they're so dysfunctional. So I'm curious, any thoughts on that?
I think there's a combination of things here. I mean, I think you're partially correct in that some people have thought this through. That's what you're saying. They've thought this through where it's going to end up. Now, I noticed with real great interest, Rick, something he did, and this was fascinating. He came out, and it was an article, I think, in the Hill, I can't remember, but he said he's not afraid to change the rule about vacating the speaker's chair. He said he's not afraid to do it. And then he brought up the fact that, you know, everybody's here in good faith. He brings that up, and that he's going to, you know, be the most transparent guy ever. And he said this, I think it was on the Sunday show, and that he's not afraid to change that rule. And in his way, the way he operates, this is going to not be a hoopla, and it's going to be quiet, and then all of a sudden something's going to happen that they like, and then the rule was just going to, boom, be changed.
Like magic.
Once he does that, you know what power that instantly gives him. The other thing he said, and this goes back to your statement, the other thing he said is that, you know, well, we could extend this temporary budget to April. Well, McCarthy was thrown out for, you know, doing one. And that tells me that there are people, that's what you said, that have thought this through. I think there's also a group of the members that finally just said, wow, we're dying right before the public. You know, I don't care now if Mickey Mouse becomes the speaker. Yeah, you know, they didn't care.
I'd have voted for Mickey Mouse.
They knew they were in trouble. You know, they had to do something. But I do think there's a group of them that think exactly what you said. Exactly.
Because every day I'm thinking something's going to come out every day. And, you know, someone, you know, you saw this story that at 25 he adopted a 14-year-old black kid. So then now I got that Hastert vibe in my head. You know, there's just all kinds of, who knows where, what path this ends up on. And I think, and I go back to, that's the point. The point is divide and conquer. Keep us in red hat, blue hat land to where we're not getting anything done.
But also, you know, any moves against him probably will come by somebody that is desiring the speakership after 2024 if they keep control.
Yeah.
The powder will be kept dry. Yeah, if right now they put themselves in such a mess, they can't afford to have any misstep. Because if the troops are riled up again, wow, you know, it's going to be an ugly place.
Last question I got for you. Ohio's got a big election coming up. Issue 1 and Issue 2, as I understand, voting yes on both Issue 1 and 2, good. Voting no on Issue 1 and 2, bad. Lots of disinformation on both. Any thoughts on the big election coming up?
Yeah, I think with issue one, of course, we know, you know, what happened with issue one. The Republicans, you know, totally blew that. So I think issue one stands, you know, the best chance to pass versus failing. That was a nightmare how the legislature turned around and tried to have an issue that would then negate the issue coming up, you know. Now, the second one was with cannabis. And so I don't know. I haven't followed that one where it's going to go. It would be legalizing recreational marijuana. I'm going to go, yes, I think issue one stands a good chance. Issue two, it's Ohio still. I don't know. It may not make it. It's Ohio.
So, that is the best phrase. It's Ohio still.
It is. So I'm going to go with a no on issue two and a yes on issue one.
There it is. From Bob's lips. Bob, always great talking with you, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. We'll see you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. There you go. It's still Ohio. That should be on a t-shirt. That's got to be one of our next t-shirts. Quick break, right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1986. That was the day that Edward Meese gave a speech to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Meese was serving as Attorney General under President Ronald Reagan. During his speech, Meese encouraged bosses to spy on their employees in order to determine if they were using drugs. He said management also has to take responsibility for surveillance of problem areas such as locker rooms, parking lots, shipping and mail room areas, and even the nearby taverns if necessary as part of controlling this problem. He also advocated for drug testing of employees. Ronald Reagan had declared what he termed the war on drugs in 1982. Meese was outlining a plan to make the workplace a battlefront of that war. During his speech, he said, "The workplace is the strategic pass-through which almost all Americans move. Consequently, the workplace can be a choke point on this use or misuse of illegal drugs." After the speech, a spokesman for Meese assured the press that the Attorney General was not advocating for bosses to infringe on the civil liberties of their employees. Many workers and unions have disagreed with that assessment. Since 1987, drug testing by employers has risen more than 250%. In 1987, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that drug testing was a mandatory subject of bargaining. By all accounts, Reagan's war on drugs had little success in stopping drug use. In 2005, 82% of polled police and sheriffs called the war a failure. However, the war on drugs has handed a resounding victory to corporate special interests like drug testing companies and privatized prisons. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Got an email during the break pointing out, you know, because look, I don't know all the details around Mike Johnson, I guess somewhat adopting this 14-year-old black kid. But it was written, apparently Mike met this black adolescent when Mike was in his 20s. And as I understand it, before he met his future wife. So apparently took him in as opposed to legally adopting him. And the details with regard to these circumstances in history have yet to be revealed. Appreciate what you do. Respectfully yours. And look, I don't know. And I'm not making allegations. It does seems interesting. Given the fact of the society that we're in. And I hate thinking like that. I hate that kind of suspicious thinking, but you know, sadly we've seen especially when, you know, people under the guise of religious zealotry. Just very interesting. And finally, evidently Lauren Boebert has turned a new leaf. She is revamping her campaign strategy. I guess groping a guy in a theater while blowing smoke in people's face, not the best campaign literature. Evidently, you know, kind of upset people in her district. And when you win an election by 546 votes, there's not a lot of room for error in ticking people off, which again, always amazed me that she was in there with Marjorie Threenames. Marjorie Threenames could grub somebody in a theater and blow smoke in people's face and could never lose because the district's that badly, skewed. But not when you're a 546 vote district. So now she's on an apology tour evidently the person who, you know, reamed Obama for being an apologist is now apologizing. She's going to campaign events and apologizing to the loyal faithful to forgive her. And I'm, you know, it's dripping with, you know, it's...
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.